Welcome to episode 7 of Bread Time. My name is Gabriel Valdivia.
And I'm Charlie Dietz.
Charlie, you're a musician?
To some degree.
I have played music before.
Are you a musician?
It's hard to say.
So we both played music in the past to varying degrees, and we've explored music as a space. Now we spend most of our time making designs and thinking about product and design. And I can't help but draw parallels about my life now as a designer and my life 6 years ago, where most of my thinking was around music. And I think there's a lot of similarities there that we can talk about. And
I'm extremely interested in hearing these similarities, because as of right now, I don't see very many. So convince me. Let's go.
Okay, cool. So just to get it out of the way, design is not art. Music sometimes is art. Without getting ourselves into the conversation of what is design or what is art, we can kind of extrapolate that design has an objective, oftentimes a business objective, around solving the problem, where music is more around self-expression. So that's not a similarity, but it's worth mentioning.
I surprisingly don't disagree with you too much.
Okay, great. The first thing that comes to mind is that as a musician, you are in charge of creating a brand. You're in charge of collaborating with people beyond you. If you're not a solo musician, you have a band. And often these bands have really high aspirations. They want to be the next insert musician here. So they usually start very small, they want something big, and they have each other to rely on. I think that is very similar to my experiences in the startups, where we have a lot of people with different roles starting in something like a garage band, and wanting to do something huge, right? So a lot of the challenges there are like, okay, how do we kind of like pull and push levers from each other so that we can all like kind of make this machine start working? And I think you could theoretically say that applies to any sort of group, but because both industries are about, to some extent, creating something from nothing, I think there's a lot to learn from that.
Making music by myself tends to feel almost entirely like artistic, because I make something from nothing. It is self-expression, and the end goal is to literally just produce something. When I became like a member of a band, and that band was touring and playing shows and making records, it was an extremely different experience, where we had to work together. We had to like produce things. We had to care about the way people were perceiving us, because like our end goal was literally to try to make music as like the primary thing we do. That was like really what we were attempting to do. Interestingly enough, I found that to be like destructive to how much I enjoyed making music. Like being in a band is extremely difficult. Like you face a ton of rejection, an audience that you don't understand. Who is the people who like your music? They don't exist yet. Like you have to make them come up from something, like from nothing. I loved making music by myself, and that's pretty much like what I do today, because that part is like therapeutic. It's enjoyable. It's like full of expression. It's like I have a wonder about what will happen when I make the music. But the actual process of being in a band, I actually already agree with you on point number one, is more similar to like my career in design, where it's like I have to work with other people. We have objectives that we're doing together. Weirdly enough, even though I found being in a band to be like pretty hard on me, like because that stuff was like just so hard, I did get the like desire during that time to like lead something, or like to like push it in a direction. Like I started, that's where I got like a lot of the things that actually probably are far more natural in my design career than they were in the music career.
It's funny, because many of the things that you said were hard about being in the band, you could just very easily apply to design. Like you don't know your audience. You don't know what they like or what they don't. You don't know how they'll react to what you're making. That is a very common problem with design and products in general. People don't know who their audience is and what the product is. I think that is an obvious parallel. The second point is, you mentioned being rejected all the time, which is basically my entire life. Like everything I do is be rejected constantly, especially at work. You know, being a designer is about presenting ideas and having those ideas being rejected constantly. So until you can find, you know, an inkling of that idea that you can then build upon, so on and so forth. So the creative process of being in the band versus being part of a design team, I think is very similar.
I agree. The reason I think it feels so different to me, like why those things feel like hell on earth, being in a band and insanely exciting when I'm a designer, is that when I'm a designer, I'm trying to solve a problem for someone else. The end goal is completely like their needs and desires. Like I'm serving them and that feels like I'm contributing to society. Whereas when I was in a band, I was trying to convince people that my self-expression was worth their time. And like that was very difficult for me to do. I felt like it, like the rejection when that's the scenario is more personal. Like the rejection of your design doesn't work for me is great. I will figure out a design that does work for you. And it's easy to get past that. When the rejection is your music is not, doesn't make me feel anything. It's like, oh, am I so different from you that you can't relate to me? Like
I felt similar things, but I feel that maybe there are some designers that also feel those things. And we have matured through the industry enough so that we can detach ourselves from the work enough so that that rejection is not so personal. And I feel like the best musicians probably do the same thing, where their goal is not necessarily to express their inner monologues, but it is to appeal to an emotion or a thought from the audience with your inner monologue. So it's still that dynamic between you and the audience. You could argue that in design, you are using yourself in your work, right? You are using your input. And that is what makes the creative side of design so satisfying, that you see a piece of yourself in what you make. As soon as that piece of yourself is rejected, then you are rejected and then you feel bad about it.
Yeah, I oversimplified it. Of course, like when I've presented designs and they don't go the right way, it hurts because it's like, I thought this was the good. I thought I was helping. Like there's plenty of rejection in our profession and it does get me down. But the thing that I can get back up from is knowing that the end goal is still the point of the whole procedure is someone else. I think you have to have an incredible sense that you have something special that you wanted to deliver to the world in order to continue to motivate yourself when it is like an artistic endeavor. And I have that to certain times or whatever, but it is very exhausting to me personally.
Totally. So another point is in the craft itself, right? So I think making music is about understanding patterns around you and trying to subvert those patterns, right? So if you think of yourself as a rock band or a rock musician, then you have an understanding of the landscape of rock bands and you see how you fit in that landscape. Maybe you don't fit. So your role is then how do I flip that landscape on its head and create something new from it? And you can apply that to any genre, or you could say, I don't fit within any genre. Therefore, my role as a musician is to take your expectations as an audience, and I will do with that what I can or what I want. And I think design is very similar. You make an app, you have an understanding of, you know, what apps look like and what apps should do, how they should behave, and you decide, do I want to participate in this pattern, or do I want to subvert it on its head? And to me, that is intrinsic in the way I work, and I think about making music all the time.
I think in music, there's essentially, like in popular music, there's essentially like two types of bands, in quotes. There's the band that comes along and does something that is authentically different, so it progresses a genre. So you could imagine, I don't want to like name any specific bands, but there's probably some band that comes along and you're like, that is rock music, but it's not what I would classify as rock music. So they're doing something different. They challenge me. Here's an easy one. Nirvana or something like that, right? Like they were rock music, but they were kind of punk music, but they were kind of like grunge, which became a new thing. But then you could imagine like a couple of years later, you have like the grunge bands who already understood what grunge was, and they just wanted to make grunge rock music. So those bands were doing a very different thing. They weren't trying to subvert the genre. They were trying to use the genre to make money or something. I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's just a different way to like make music. You're like, I understand the thing and I want to do that thing. Like disco is probably another good example. Before disco, it was like, what is this new thing? And then there were probably many disco bands that came along that were like, I just want to make a disco album.
To me, that thinking applies in a macro and a micro level, right? So as a band, you have to consider the landscape of your music. But even within a song, right? Like songs are very, like it's all about patterns, whether it is a bar or a chord or a chord progression, and you want to like lead people into this pattern and create a little bit of a, like an intuitiveness to it. I remember when I was first learning, just like really falling in love with music, I was listening to music with my brother, who is also a musician. And I remember he showing me like some sort of band, I forget what it was, but I was kind of bored by it, and I told him like, this is kind of boring. I know when they're gonna do the drum fill. I can anticipate it and I can do it. And my brother was like, well, that's the point. There's a certain beauty to that. You knowing that there's gonna be a drum fill, and then it actually is a drum fill, and they execute it properly, so that like you get like a dopamine hit out of that, right? Like the adrenaline of like listening to music is like you expect it happens and it lands, right?
Like a ton of dance music. I mean, like the drop. Like the moment that you like, you're like, I'm going to build the tension and something's about to happen right after this. And like the drop has been exploited a zillion times, but everyone does it a little differently. And like, right. You know, something's going to happen, but what is the thing that's going to happen?
But that's part of the beauty, right? Like the people know generally, at least subconsciously, the structure of songs. They know that there's this thing called the drop, and they know kind of like they can recognize that pattern, playing along that and all of a sudden changing that pattern and flipping it on its head. That is the real magic. And the design is the same way. Like I make an app, it has a tap bar, it has this and that. But if I'm path, I have a button that I press, and all these like circles come out of it and start rotating. That little moment where you break that pattern.
So you have the people who change the stuff and try to mutate it into something new, either intentionally or unintentionally in music. And then you have the people who try to play into those patterns that have been developed. And then you have that exactly in UI design, right? So like the people who change something, like Snapchat invented quite a number of new models of how you both create and consume social content. And then you have like Instagram, who like literally said, hey, that model works really good, and we are now going to use that model because it makes sense for the people who are using our product as well. So it's the same back and forth sort of thing. I guess the other thing that music and design have a lot in common with today is like technology, right? So using software to make music these days, it's you are crafting the sound in a very non-time-based way, right? I go in there, I tweak things, I rearrange things, I make things occur from other things. It's very much like the models of interaction of music now are not what they were.
I think about that all the time when I am working on Sketch or any other design tool. I think about the countless hours I spent on Logic or Pro Tools, and that kind of relationship between what you're making, there are layers and the segments of the app that you're working on, right? Like maybe you're working on the login flow for the app. Well, I'm working on the intro for the song, and I think of them conceptually the same, where like part of an experience that you walk people through, and they all need to tie cohesively, right? And they all have kind of like their own tools. Like in the case of music, you have certain instruments that you use and a certain kind of atmosphere that you're creating. And the same thing with design, right? You have visual elements, and they all play within a universal language, right? These instruments have notes that have been established, right? That are universal, and you just play with them a little differently. And UI, you have these buttons that like you have to have a login button, but like maybe yours is a little different. And I think that to me is what's so exciting about the two realms.
In music, my end goal is almost always to obscure and confuse, like to whatever degree I can within the music. I want the lyrics to not exactly make sense. I want them to make sense to me, but I don't want them to be very accessible on like the first listen. I don't like lyrics that are like, I'm going down to the Johnny. You know, like, that's not my scene. I want it to feel like something you want to dig into. So across the board in music, I'm trying to obscure things. In design, I'm always trying to clarify things. There's a lot more to these two things that are in common than not in common, but my objectives tend to be very different when working within music and working within design.
That's not inherent to the practice. I think that's a personal goal that you've established. I think you can make music to clarify, and you can make design too obscure.
That's true.
and maybe there's less of a market for design that obscures, but I think there is maybe relevance for having both.
I would think that it would be very uncool of me to make design that is intentionally difficult to use. And I think it would be very uncool of me to make music that is clear. Those, for whatever reason, in my mind, I have these opinions about these two things, and they seem like they're opposite, but they're both satisfying.
As with everything, it is about balance and about finding the gray area, right? I would argue that John Mayer is very clear,
yeah.
Although there are some obscurity in his songs, right? And there's value behind that. Similarly, you can make design that is very clear, yet has some mystical element, something behind it that is obscure and that you don't want total transparency on. And I think that combination is what makes the best shine through.
Man, I gotta like think about all this stuff. Damn it.
Cool. Well, we hope you think about it too. And that wraps up the 7th episode of Brett Time with Gabriel Valdivia
and Charlie Dietz. Thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this, share it with a friend or subscribe via iTunes or whatever podcasting app you use. Also, if you have ideas for things that we should talk about, feel free to tweet them at us. We have a website which is called breadtime.fm, and you can find us on Twitter or Facebook with that same handle.